Welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, bringing the tales and stories of the ancient Celts to your fireside. Episode 28, The Realm of the Ever-Living.
Hello, welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show. I'm Ruth.
And I'm Gary. If you'd like to chat to us, you can do that using Twitter or on Facebook, MySpace, or in our forums. If you'd like to send us some feedback, you can send an email to garyandruth@celticmythpodshow.com.
Yes, we've set up a new email address, garyandruth@celticmythpodshow.com. By the way, that's not a squirrely and, that's an A-N-D in the middle.
Oh, good point, good point.
Then the email goes to both of us. So if Gary's busy building the show, I can answer the emails, which means you folks get replies a lot faster.
Sounds great. Shall we move on with some news and views?
Yes.
I've been quite poorly just recently, so everything is running a bit late. But we'll do our best to get the shows out to you as soon as we can. I'd like to say a really big thank you to everyone that has sent me get well soon wishes. You're all wonderful. Thank you.
We'd also like to let you know that our kids have moved out this week, and we may be moving very shortly as well.
God's willing. This may mean some irregularity to the show, though. Depending on whether the house is full of men moving boxes. Or when we next get our internet connection set up. As usual, we'll do our best.
And that's about it. Are we ready to move on to part two of the Saga of Manannan?
Who are me hearties? Shiver me timbers. Pass me the rum.
What are you on?
Too much Pirates of the Caribbean, I'm afraid.
Good grief. Let's get on with it.
Okay, then. In this middle part of the Saga of Manannan, we learn about the home of Manannan, the realm of the ever-living. We hear about visits by men to the kingdom of the sea, and we hear about the times that the souls of mortal men are called there by the women of the Shi. Manannan of the sea, full of craft and more cunning than a fox, was ruler of a land far away from the eyes of mortal men. Sometimes he would travel from his kingdom and enter the Emerald Isle, and at other times mortal men found themselves on his shores. Whether his land could be found far beyond the reach of the waves or deep below the mighty swell, there are none now that can tell with surety. And yet all have heard how the rainbows of his skies contain colours brighter and greater in number than those that arc high above Erin. How the birds sing in glorious symphonies full of harmonies both heard and unheard. How the light of the trees enters the soul in a deep inner joining of land, sea, and sky. Some of the mortal men who travelled to Manannan's country were lucky enough to return, and the songs of their journeys have come down to us over the centuries. One of these was Bran, the son of Ferbal. It happens that one fine spring morning, he was out walking by himself near his dun, and he heard gentle music behind him. No matter how much he turned or how much he searched, it was always behind him. And at last he lay on the soft grass and fell asleep to the sweetness of the sound. Eventually he awoke from his sleep and he saw beside him a branch of glowing silver. And it was covered with radiant white blossoms. And the whiteness of the silver was the same as the whiteness of the blossoms. So he brought the branch in his hand into the royal house, and when all of the people were around him, a woman dressed in strange and wondrous raiment appeared, standing in the centre of the hall. All the people were looking at her in amazement, for she seemed to shine with an inner light, and they knew she must be from the other world, a messenger from the Shining Ones. The silence fell like gentle rain, and she began to make a song for Bran. With a soft voice that was heard throughout the hall, she said,
I bring a branch of the apple tree from Erwin, from the far island around which are the shining horses of Manannan, the son of Lir. A delight to the eyes is the plain where the hosts hold their games. Colour racing against chariot can be seen in the white-silver plain to the south. There are feet of white bronze under it, shining through life and time, a beautiful level land throughout the length of the world's age, with many blossoms falling on it. There is an ancient tree there with blossoms, and birds calling from among them. Every colour is shining there. Delight is common, and music, in the gentle-voiced plain, in the silver cloud plain to the south. Keening is never heard, or treachery found, in the tilled familiar land. There is nothing hard or rough, but sweet music striking on the ear. To be without grief, without sorrow, without death, without any sickness, without weakness. That is the sign of Erwin. It is common to find such wonders there. There is nothing to liken its mist to. The sea washes the wave against the land, and brightness falls from its hair in silken droplets. There are riches, treasures of every colour in the gentle land, the bountiful land. Sweet music to be listening to, the best wine to drink. Golden chariots in the plain of the sea, rising up to the sun with the tide. Silver chariots and bronze chariots on the plain of sports. There are golden yellow horses on the strand, with crimson horses and others with wool on their backs, blue like the colour of the sky. The days are always of glorious weather. Silver is dropping on the land, a pure white cliff on the edge of the sea, getting its warmth from the sun. The hosts race over the plain of sports. Their sport is beautiful and skillful. Their games are fierce. Death or the ebbing of the tide will not come to them in the many-coloured land. At sunrise, a fair man comes upon the shore, lighting up the level lands. He rides upon the plain that is beaten by the waves. He stirs the sea until it's like blood. An army will come over the clear sea, rowing to the stone that they can see, that 100 sounds of music come from. It sings a song to the army. It is not sad through the length of time. It increases the music with 100 singing together. They do not look for death or the ebb tide. There are 3 times 50 far islands in the ocean to the west of us, and every one of them twice, 3 times fairer than Erin. It is not to all of you I am speaking, though I have made all these wonders known. Let Bran listen from the crowd of the world with especial care to all the wisdom that has been told him. Do not fall upon a bed of sloth. Do not be overcome by drunkenness. Set out on your voyage over the clear sea, and you may chance to come to Tir na mBan, the land of women.
With that, the woman faded from them, and they did not know where she went. She brought away her branch with her, for it leapt into her hand from Bran's hand, and he didn't have the strength to hold it. On the morrow, Bran set out upon the sea, and 3 companies of 9 along with him. And one of his foster brothers and comrades was set over each company of 9. And when they'd been rowing for 2 days and two nights, they saw a man coming towards them in a sea-foam chariot pulled by proud white wave horses over the sea. And the man made himself known to them, and he said that he was Manannan, son of Lir. And then Manannan spoke to him in a song, and it is what he said.
I see that Bran thinks he is going in his curragh over the wonderful, beautiful clear sea. But to me, from far off in my chariot, it is a flowery plain he is riding on. What is a clear sea to the good boat Bran is in? Is a happy plain with many flowers to me in my two-wheeled chariot. Bran sees many waves beating across the clear sea. I myself see perfect red flowers. The seahorses are bright in summertime, as far as Bran's eyes can reach. And yet there is a wood of beautiful acorns under the head of your little boat. A wood with blossom and with fruit that has the smell of wine. A wood without fault, without withering, with leaves of the colour of gold. Let Bran row on steadily. It is not far to the land of women. Before the setting of the sun, you will reach Erin of many coloured hospitality.
And with that, Bran went from him. And after a while, he saw an island, and he rode around it. And there was a crowd on it, wondering at them, and laughing. And they were all looking at Bran and his people, and they wouldn't stop to talk to them, but went on giving out gusts of laughter. Bran sent one of his men to the island then. But he joined with the others, and began to stare the same way as the men of the island. So Bran went on rowing round about the island, and whenever they went past his own man, his comrades would speak to him. But he would not answer them. He would only stare and wonder at them. So they went away and left him on that island that is called the Island of Joy. It was not long after that they reached the land of women, and they saw the chief one of the women at the landing place, and it is what she said.
Come hither to land, Bran, son of Faerbal. Welcome is your coming to us.
But Bran did not dare to go on shore. And then the woman threw a ball of thread straight at him, and he caught it in his hand, and it held fast to his palm. And the woman kept the thread in her own hand, and she pulled the curragh to the landing place. So they clambered out of their boats, and they went on into a grand house, where there was a bed for every couple. 3 times 9 beds. And the food that was put on every dish never came to an end. And they had every sort of food and of drink that they wished for. Time passed quickly for Bran and his men on the Island of Women. And it seemed to them they were only a year there. And the desire of home took hold on one of them. Nechdan, son of Colbroin, and his kinsmen were begging and praying Bran to go back with them to Erin. The women said there would be regret on them if they went. But in spite of that, they eventually decided to set out. The women said to them not to touch the land when they were come to Erin, and they bade them to visit and to take with them the man they'd left on the Island of Joy. So they went on towards Erin till they came to the place called Srubruin, and there were people on the strand that asked them who they were that were coming over the sea. And Bran said,
I am Bran, son of Faerbal.
But the people said,
We know of no such man, though the voyage of Bran is one of our very old stories.
Then Nechton, son of Colbroin, who was eager to set foot on the Emerald Shores, made a leap out of the curragh, and no sooner did he touch the shore of Erin than he turned into a heap of ashes, the same as if he had been in the earth through hundreds of years. And then Bran told the whole story of his wanderings to the people from the beginning. And after that he bade them farewell, and his wanderings from that time are not known. the mists of time shifted and parted slowly to reveal Cormac, grandson of Conn, king of Tavir. He was by himself in Tavir one time, and he saw an armed man coming towards him, quiet and of noble appearance. He had grey hair, a shirt ribbed with gold thread next to his skin, broad shoes of white bronze between his feet and the ground, and a shining branch having 9 apples of red gold on his shoulder. Oh, it's delightful, the sound of that branch was. And no one on earth could keep in mind any want or trouble or tiredness when that branch was shaken for him. And whatever trouble there might be on him, he would instantly forget it at that sound. And then Cormac and the armed man saluted one another, and Cormac asked where he came from.
I come from a country where there is nothing but truth, and where there is neither age nor withering away, nor heaviness, nor sadness, nor jealousy, nor envy, nor pride.
That is not so in our country. I would be well pleased to have your friendship.
I am well pleased to give it.
If it pleases you, give me your branch to go along with it.
I will give it if you will give me 3 gifts that I ask in return.
I will give them to you indeed. Then the strange man left the branch and went away, and Cormac did not know where he was gone to. He went back then into the royal house, and there was wonder on all the people when they saw that branch. And he shook it at them, and it put them all asleep from that day till the same time on the morrow. But at the end of a year, the strange man came back again, and he asked for the first of his 3 requests.
I have come for the first of my 3 gifts.
You'll get it.
I will take your daughter, Oila, today.
So he brought away the girl with him. And the women of Erin gave 3 loud cries after the king's daughter. But Cormac shook the branch at them until it put away sorrow from them and put them all into their sleep. And that day, the next month, the stranger came again, and he brought Cormac's son, Cabre Lifcar, away with him. And there was crying and lamenting without end in Tavir after the boy. And on that night no one ate or slept, and they were all under grief and very downhearted. But when Cormac shook the branch, their sorrow went from them. Then the stranger came a 3rd time, and Cormac asked him what did he want.
You come again, stranger, for the 3rd time. Is it to ask for your 3rd gift you've come?
It is indeed. And it is your wife, Enya, I am asking for this time.
And he went away, bringing Enya the queen along with him. But Cormac could not bear that, and he went after them, and all his people were following him. And as they reached the middle of the plain of the wall, a thick mist came upon them. And when it was gone, Cormac found himself standing alone on a great plain. As he looked around, he saw a great dun in the middle of the plain, with a wall of bronze around it. And in the dun stood a house of white silver, and it half thatched with the white wings of birds. There was a great troop of the riders of the Shi all about the house, and their arms full of white birds' wings for thatching. But as soon as they were put on the thatch, a blast of wind would come and carry it away again. Then he saw a man kindling a fire, and he was throwing a thick oak tree upon it. And he came back with a 2nd tree. The 1st one would be already burnt out.
I will be looking at you no longer, for there is no one here to tell me your story. I think I could probably find good sense in your actions if I could only understand them.
But then he went on to where there was another dun, very large and very royal, with another wall of bronze around it and 4 houses within it. He went in and saw a great king's house having beams of bronze and walls of silver, its thatch of the wings of white birds.
and then he saw on the green a shining well, and five streams flowing from it, and armies were drinking water there in turn. And the nine lasting purple hazels of Buan were growing over it. They were dropping their nuts into the water, and five salmon would catch them and send their husks floating down the streams. The sound of the flowing of those streams was sweeter than any music that mortal men could sing. Then he went into the palace, and he found there waiting for him a man and a woman, very tall, having wonderful clothes of many colours. The man was beautiful as to shape, and his face wonderful to look at. And as to the young woman that was with him, she was the loveliest of all the women of the world, and she having yellow hair and a golden helmet. And there was a bath there, with heated stones going in and out of the water all by themselves, and Cormac bathed himself in it.
"Rise up, man of the house, for this is a comely traveller that has come to us. And if you have one kind of food or meat better than another, let it be brought in."
The man rose up then, and he said,
"I have but 7 pigs, but I could feed the whole world with them. For the pig that is killed and eaten today, you will find it alive again tomorrow."
Another man came into the house then, having an axe in his right hand and a log in his left hand, and a pig behind him.
"It is time to make ready, for we have a high guest with us today."
Then the man struck the pig and killed it, and he cut the logs and made a fire, and he put the pig on it in a cauldron.
"It is time for you to turn it,"
said the master of the house after a while.
"There be no use doing that, for never and never will the pig be boiled until a truth is told for every quarter of it."
"Then let you tell yours first."
"One day, I found another man's cows in my land, and I brought them with me into a cattle pound. The owner of the cows followed me, and he said he would give me a reward to let the cows go free. So I gave them back to him, and he gave me an axe. And when a pig is to be killed, it is with the axe it is killed, and the log is cut with it, and there is enough wood to boil the pig, and enough for the whole palace besides. That's not all, for the log is found whole again in the morning. And from that time till now, that is the way they are."
"It is true indeed, that story is."
They turned the pig in the cauldron then, and but one quarter of it was found to be cooked.
"Let us tell another true story."
"I will tell one. Ploughing time had come, and when we had a mind to plough that field outside, it is the way we found it, ploughed and harrowed, and sowed with wheat. When we had a mind to reap it, the wheat was found in the haggard, all in one thatched rick. We've been using it from that day to this, and it is no bigger and no less."
Then they turned the pig, and another quarter was found to be ready.
"It is my turn now. I have 7 cows and 7 sheep, and the milk of the 7 cows would satisfy the whole of the men of the world, if they were in the plain drinking it. And it is enough for all of the people of the land of promise. And it is from the wool of the 7 sheep, or the clothes they wear are made."
And at that story, the third quarter of the pig was boiled.
"Tell me, master of this house, that if these stories are true, you must be Mananan, and this is Mananan's wife. For no one on the whole ridge of the world owns these treasures but himself. It was to the land of promise he went to look for that woman, and he got those 7 cows with her."
There were smiles all round, and they said to Cormac that it was his turn now. So Cormac told them how his wife and his son and his daughter had been brought away with him, and how he himself had followed them till he came to this place. And with that, the whole pig was boiled, and they cut it up, and Cormac's share was put before him.
"I have never eaten a meal yet, having only 2 persons in my company."
The man of the house began singing to him then, and put him asleep. And when he awoke, he saw 50 armed men, and his son, and his wife, and his daughter along with them. And there was great gladness and courage on him then, and ale and food were given out to them all. And there was a gold cup put into the hand of the master of the house. And Cormac was much wondering at it, from the number of the shapes on it, and the curiousness of its work.
There is a stranger thing yet about it. Let three lying words be spoken under it, and it will break into three. And then let three true words be spoken under it, and it will be as good as before.
So he said three lying words under it, and it broke into three pieces.
It is best to speak truth now under it, and to mend it. And I give my word, Cormac, that until today, neither your wife or your daughter has seen the face of any man since they were brought away from you out of Tavir, and that your son has never seen the face of any woman.
And with that, the cup was whole again on the moment.
Bring away your wife and children with you now, and this cup along with them. That way you'll have it for judging between truth and untruth. And I will leave the branch with you for music and delight. But on the day of your death, they'll be taken from you again. And I am indeed myself, Manannan, son of Lir, king of the land of promise. And I brought you here by enchantments that you might be here with me tonight in friendship. And on your journey here, the riders you saw thatching the house are the men of arts and poets, and all that look for a fortune in Erin, putting together cattle and riches. For when they go out, all that they leave in their houses goes to nothing. And so they go on forever. And the man you saw kindling the fire is a young lord that is more liberal than he can afford. And everyone else is served while he is getting the feast ready, and everyone else profiting by it. And the well you saw is the well of knowledge, and the streams are the five streams through which all knowledge goes. And no one will have knowledge who does not drink a draught from the well itself or out of one of the streams. And the people of many arts are those who drink from them all.
And on the morning of the morrow, when Cormac rose up, he found himself on the green of Tavir, and his wife and his son and his daughter along with him, and he having his branch and his cup. And it was given the name of Cormac's cup, and it used to judge between truth and falsehood among the Gael. But after the night of Cormac's death, there was no sign of that wondrous grail in the whole of Erin, just as Manannan had foretold. The mists begin to sweep over the rich green of Tavir, that will be called Tara in later years, and we lose sight of Cormac in the thickening swirls of time-blown darkness. For the third time they clear, and the proud rocks of Ulaid Green slowly become visible. This is the time of the brave Finn and the Fianna of Erin. Amongst the roving band of the Fianna was Kivorn of the Curling Hair, the king of Ulaid's son, who was the most beautiful of the young men of the world at that time. And he was as far beyond all the other king's sons as the moon is beyond the stars. And Finn liked him well. But the rest of the Fianna got to be tired of him, because there was not a woman of their women, wed or unwed, but gave him a love. And Finn had to send him away at the last, for he was in dread of the men of Fianna because of the greatness of their jealousy. So Kivorn went on till he came to the strand of the Cairn, that is called now the Strand of the Strong Man, between Dun Saborica and the sea. And there he saw a curragh, and it having a narrow stern of copper. Kivorn got into the curragh, and his people said, "Is it to leave Erin you have a mind, Kivorn?"
"It is indeed, for in Erin I can get neither shelter nor protection."
He bade farewell to his people then, and he left them very sorrowful after him, for to part with him was like the parting of life from the body. Kivorn went on in the curragh, and great white shouting waves rose up about him, every one of them the size of a mountain. And the beautiful speckled salmon that he used to stop in the sand and the shingle rose up to the sides of the curragh, till great dread came on Kivorn, and he said,
"By my word,
If it was on land I could make a better fight for myself. And he was in this danger till he saw a rider coming towards him on a dark grey horse, having a golden bridle. And he would be under the sea for the length of 9 waves. And he would rise with the 10th wave, no wet on him at all. And he said,
"What reward would you give to whoever would bring you out of this great danger?"
"Is there anything in my hand worth offering you?"
"There is, that you would give your service to whoever would give you his help."
Kivorn agreed to that, and he put his hand into the rider's hand. With that, the rider drew him onto the horse, and the Curragh came on beside them till they reached the shore of Tir Toin Gaora, the land of promise. They got off the horse there, and they came to Loch Luchra, the lake of the dwarves, and eventually to Mananann's city. A feast was being made ready there after a while, with comely serving boys going round with smooth horns and playing on sweet-sounding harps till the whole house was filled with the music. Then there came in jesters, long-snouted, long-heeled, lean and bald and red, that used to be doing tricks in Mananann's house. One of these tricks was this. A man of them would take 9 straight willow rods and throw them up to the rafters of the house and catch them again as they came down, and he standing on one leg and having but one hand free. And they thought no one could do that trick by themselves. And they used to ask strangers to do it so they could all laugh as the stranger failed. So this night, when one of them had done the trick, he came up to Kivorn, that was beyond all the men of day, all the sons of Gale that were in the house in shape and in walk and in name. And he put the 9 rods in his hand. So Kivorn stood up and looked at the sticks in his hand. Smiling, he made his way to the centre of the hall, and he did the feat before them all, the same as if he had never learned to do any other thing. Now Gaborn, that was the chief druid in Mananann's country, had a daughter, Clorna of the Fair Hair, that had never given her love to any man. But when she saw Kivorn, the stars rose glorious for her, as they had never before, and she gave him her love. They spoke together all night, their eyes trapped in each other's, and she agreed to go away with him on the morrow. In the early dawn light, before the household was awake, they crept away down to the landing place and got into a curragh, and they sailed away till they came to Tater's Strand in the southern part of Erin. And it was from Tater Breck the Freckled the Strand got its name, who went there one time to play in the waves with 3 times 50 other young girls, and they were all drowned in that place. But Kivorn and Clorna arrived on that shore, and hunger was upon them. So Kivorn went looking for the deer, as was right, under the thick branches of the wood, and he left the young girl in the boat on the strand. But the people of Mananann's house came after them, having 40 ships. Yuchnu, the lady's chaperone that was in the curragh with Clorna, did treachery, playing music in the breaking waves to her till she lay down in the boat and fell asleep. And a great wave came up on the strand and drew her back into the water. And that wave got its name from Clorna of the Fair Hair, who will be long remembered. Let the mists roil back over that sad scene, and let the slow passage of years hide the pain in Kivorn's breast. For often as the death and the birth comes upon us, so does the veil of forgetfulness, lest mortals be drowned in the pains and joys of lost memory. Strange it is how the pains of loss be remembered long in story after the joys are forgotten. Such, at least, is how the tale of Connla of the Red Hair comes into memory. It chanced one day that Connla was with his father, Conn, king of Tavir, on the hill of Wisnech, and he saw a shining maiden wearing exquisite clothing coming towards him.
"Where is it you come from?"
"I come from Tir na mBiall, the land of the ever-living ones, where no death comes. We use feasts that are lasting, and we do every kind thing without quarrelling. And we are called the people of the Shi.
Who are you speaking to, boy?
Said Conn to him then. For no one saw the strange woman but only Connla. The light about her shifted and became heavier as her voice was heard by all.
He is speaking to a high woman that death or old age will never come to. I am asking him to come to Moy Mell, the pleasant plain, where the triumphant king is living. And there he will be a king, forever without sorrow or fret. Come with me, Connla of the red hair, of the fair freckled neck, and of the ruddy cheek. Come with me, and your body will not wither from its youth and its comeliness forever.
Help me, Conan, my druid, you that sing spells of the great arts. There's an attack made on me that is beyond my wisdom and beyond my power. I never knew so strong an attack since the first day I was king. There is an unseen figure fighting with me. She is using her strength against me to bring away my beautiful son. The call of a woman is bringing him away from the hands of a king.
I will banish this she-woman.
And then Corran the druid began singing spells against the woman of the she, the way that no one would hear her voice, and Connla could not see her anymore. But as she was being driven away by the spells of the druid, she threw an apple to Connla. Through the length of a month from that time, Connla would have no other food nor drink but that apple, for he thought no other food or drink worth the having. And yet for all he ate of it, the apple grew no smaller, but was whole all the while. On account of the vision of beauty he had seen, there was great trouble on Connla. And at the end of that month, Connla was at his father's side in Moy Achomnim, and he saw the same woman coming towards him. He watched closely as she glided amongst them, and she said,
"It is a high place indeed Connla has among dying people, with death before him. But the ever-living ones are asking you to take the sway over the people of Tira, for they are looking at you every day in the gatherings of your country among your dear friends."
And when Conn the king heard her voice, he said to his people,
"Call Corran the druid to me, for I hear the sound of that woman's voice again."
But on that, she said,
"O Conn, fighter of 100, now you are within the realms of the wonderful tribes of the Tremor, the great strand, and they have little love and less respect for your druids. And where the power of their law stretches, it scatters the spells on their lips."
"What say you, my son? For my heart grieves dear."
"My own people are dearer to me than any other thing. Yet sorrow has taken hold of me because of this woman."
"Come now, into the shining ship, if you will come to the Plain of Victory. There is another country that would not be worse for you to look for. Though the bright sun is going down, we shall reach to that country before night. That is the country that delights the mind of everyone who turns to me. There is no living race in it, but women and girls only."
And as the woman ended her song, Connla made a leap from his people into the shining boat, and they saw him sailing away from them far off, and as if in a mist, as far as their eyes could see. It is away across the sea they went, and they have never come back. And where they went after that time,
well, only the gods know. In our next story, we hear about those that return from Mananan's kingdom.
That was a long story, but I really enjoyed it. I think it's time we had some listener feedback. What about you?
Good idea. This time, we're lucky enough to have some audio feedback to play you.
Oh, excellent.
This is from Ariel from the Druidic Craft of the Wise podcast. He does some others as well, but that one I really like. And it's a lovely message.
Let's listen.
"Hi, Gary. Hi, Ruth. This is Ariel from the Druidic Craft of the Wise podcast and a Witch's Primer podcast. And I just wanted to stop by and tell you how much I love your show. I get so much out of it. I learn so much. Plus, it's highly entertaining. And you two are just masterful storytellers. The podcast is very professionally produced. It's a delight to listen to. And I look forward to each and every episode. And I listen to each episode over and over again because I learn so much. I hope that you keep doing what you're doing. Thank you so much.
Hi, Ariel.
Hi, Ariel. It's so good to hear from you.
It is. And thank you so much for your very kind words. You're making us blush here.
Yes. Thank you, Ariel. And good luck with your wonderful shows.
And now let's listen to Scarlet with a promo for the Lakefront Pagan Voice.
Hello, my name is Scarlet, hostess of the podcast Lakefront Pagan Voice. Come for a walk with me along the shores of Lake Michigan. We can talk about spirituality, about paganism, witchcraft, and shamanism. We can talk about what's going on at the local farmers market and share our favorite recipes. And we can get some fresh air and exercise while we're at it. So join me in iTunes or at Podbean for a stroll.
Yes, Scarlett's been kind enough to send us a message before, so we thought it might be nice if you heard the promo for her fascinating show.
Thank you, Scarlett.
Yes, thank you. Don't forget to check our show notes for this episode on CelticMythPodShow.com to find out where you can find all the podcasts we talk about. Just before we go, do you remember we were talking about Dave the Bard in the last show?
Yes.
Well, Dave sent out a newsletter this week requesting help. So I thought, as so many of our listeners are fans of Dave's music, we could read his request out on the show.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Dave says,
I've opened discussions with the organisers of the Pagan Spirit Gathering in Minnesota to see if I can get back to the USA and play at their event in 2010. I'm really hoping this will happen, but you can help me. If they know that people are ready to come and see me play at the festival, it may well help. So if you go to the Pagan Spirit Gathering, or would go if I was playing live there, drop them an email and let them know that you'd like to see me there. I'd really like to play a couple of pagan festivals in the USA next year. So if you go to one that you think I should consider, email me the details and I'll get in touch with them.
So get emailing the Pagan Spirit Gathering and help Dave the Bard to play in the USA next year.
You can find the website address for the Pagan Spirit Gathering in the show notes, as well as the email addresses for both the Pagan Spirit Gathering and Dave the Bard.
Well, I think that about wraps it up for this show.
It does. So, until next time, we'd like to say...
Slongavoil!
You've been listening to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, available from CelticMythPodShow.com. We hope you've enjoyed the show and will stay tuned for the next episode. You can send us a quick email or voice feedback by emailing either Gary, that's G-A-R-Y, or Ruth, R-U-T-H, at CelticMythPodShow.com. Or you can chat to us in the forums on our website. The show notes for this episode can also be found on the website. We'd like to say a special thank you to Coulan's Hounds, who provided us with the theme music for our show. You heard Hag Hole at the beginning and are listening to The Skylark now. You can find out more about this foot-stomping band at www.sfhounds.com. And thanks again to Diane Arkinstone and Kim Robertson, whose music has been used for some of the incidental music in this podcast. You'll find links to their websites in our show notes.